Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by the Irish Rover Station House in Langhorne, PA, and Allstate Insurance in Westchester, PA. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. And hey, Chet, the Sixers are in a little playoff tussle, and the Phillies have fallen to five back. But we have two great guests tonight. There's plenty to talk about in Philly sports again tonight.
Yeah, well, as usual, Bill, in a perfect world, let me say, the Sixers would be a couple of hours from ending their series with the Hawks, but it just didn't work out quite the way we planned. They're in a real dogfight right now. They have to win game five, or Sixers fans are going to be in an awful mood all day Thursday and Friday. As for the Phillies, Bill, a wild week at home with three straight walk-off wins. Then the shutout of the Yankees on Sunday, things were looking great. Then they went out west. You know how that's going so far. The road woes continue, so we'll talk about the Phils.
Absolutely. Clayton Kershaw tonight, and then off to San Francisco for three games against first-place Gabe Kapler and the Giants.
How about that?
Well, hey, we got a couple great guests tonight. Newly retired Frank Fitzpatrick joins us, and the voice of the Phillies, Tom McCarthy, is going to join us in the second half. So let's get it started. Let's welcome Frank back to Philly Press Box Radio. Frank, welcome back and welcome to retirement.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. By the way, I really liked your opening. It must have cost you guys a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Home done. Home done. All home done.
Frank, congrats on the retirement. And we're not going to do a Ralph Edwards, this is your life kind of thing, but we do want to talk maybe about some of your memorable moments in your long career, nearly a half century in journalism. I'm not saying you're old, but you've been working at this a long time. I know you joined the Inquirer in 1980, but where were you in the 1970s? Tell us about, you know, how you got to the Inquirer.
Well, my last 2 years of college, I was an intern in the sports department at the old Philadelphia Bulletin. The night sports editor there, I worked nights, and the guy was named Lou King, and he had worked in Reading, Pennsylvania. So when I graduated, he kindly wrote me a letter of recommendation to the managing editor there, and they sort of hired me, you know, cold. I didn't get it. I wasn't in sports, though. I was a police reporter. Then I became an editor about a year or two later, and I stayed in editing. I went to 1979, the Courier Post started a Sunday paper. And I was hired as the deputy Sunday editor. And I was there a year when I got the call from the Inquirer.
Oh, by the way, I got to show this picture just because I love the Bobby Sherman look.
Frank Osmond, yeah.
48 years ago. Love that hair, Frank.
Yeah, it's I'd gotten a haircut 2 days earlier. I just want you to know.
Oh, my goodness.
this is my Geraldo Rivera look.
1980.
Did I see that in a post office anywhere?
You may well have, yeah.
Hey, Frank, you mentioned to us before when we had you on about your mom being a real sports fan and and all that, and keeping scores and things of that of games. Was she a huge influence on you becoming a sports writer? Was she the one kind of that got you the love of the of sports?
You know, to some extent, I think she was, because I spent a lot of nights at the radio listening to games with her. But my dad really was, because he worked in a composing room. He was a proofreader at the old Bulletin. And a guy there owned the Roxborough Advertiser and the Germantown Courier. And my dad was so interested in sports, and he liked to fool around at writing, he made him the sports editor of those two papers. So I grew up sort of around this, you know, it was only a weekly, but I could see my father working in journalism. And oftentimes he would be too busy because he was working another job to write his column, and he would ask me to write it for him. I was 13, 14, and this was quite a thrill. His column was called Sorta Sporty. So I remember the couple columns that I wrote there. I wouldn't want to see them again, but I think that's how I really got interested in wanting to be a sports writer. And then I wrote for the Marple Township paper. I asked the editor if I could cover Little League games when I was 13 or 14, and he allowed me to do that. And so I sort of got my feet wet pretty early.
Frank, I loved your farewell column on over the weekend. Talking about, you know, your long career. And even at the Inquirer, you didn't start out writing about sports. Your first couple of years, you did other stuff. Tell us about that, and please mention that Wilson Good screw up.
Yeah. Well, I was hired as a copy editor, and after a while, I got to be the chief of the copy desk, and I was working in Metro, and it was election night, which is a crazy time, especially in those days with all the additions and, you know, hundreds of people running around the newsroom like chickens with their heads cut off. And just before deadline, I had to rewrite the top of a story on the mayoral election between Wilson Good and Frank Rizzo. I think it was Frank Rizzo, yeah. And I hastily did it. I retyped it into the system and sent it to the composing room, and they put it in type. And a little while later, we got the proofs. And here I see that I had retyped Wilson Good's name as W. Wilson Goose. And so it wasn't long after that I was back, that I was in sports. I'm not sure that two are connected, but.
Well, hey, Frank, in that same article, you mentioned about the 1993 Phillies and Jim Fregosi, but you didn't go into a lot of detail with that. Tell us the Fregosi story. It sounds like it might be a good one.
Yeah, he wasn't a big fan of yours, I don't think, Frank.
No, and it was mutual. You know, the feeling was actually mutual. And he was an old school baseball guy, and he had a belief about how everyone should act and how writers should act. And if you didn't sort of toe that line, he would let you know about it. And I was new to the baseball beat, and I did things my way, and I had my own interest. I was more interested in the personalities on the team and sort of telling the story of how this team came together. And he was expecting a more X and O type guy, and that just wasn't me. But anyway, we had a number of run-ins. But one of them was when I had written a story about, there was dissension in the clubhouse. This was in 92. They were an awful team that year, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of veteran guys that weren't there the next year. One of them was Wally Backman, and he just pulled me aside one night and said, "This team, you know, this is really a messed up team. Pitchers don't talk to the hitters, and the young guys don't talk to the old guys." He said, "No wonder this team's a mess." So I wrote the story, and you know, you can imagine, I was on the job about 2 weeks. Fregosi reads it, and next day he calls me into the office and just reads me the riot act and says, "You know, I've tried to help you, but you just keep writing what the hell you want to write." And so we had that conversation many times over the years. But I don't know if you're referring to the story about my second night on the job. They had a get together in Clearwater at a restaurant there. Shepherd's, I think, was the name of it. And the writers got to sit around with Fregosi and sort of off the record ask him questions and stuff. And here's my first chance to get to know the guy up close. And I was gesturing with my hand to make a point or something, and I knocked two drinks into his lap. We sort of got off on the wrong foot, and we never really did get back on track. But you know, the guys loved him. The guys in the clubhouse loved him. He was
Well, that must have been quite an experience, because those macho row guys were, from what I understand, kind of tough to deal with on occasion. they didn't really like talking to the reporters, but I mean, the fans loved them just because, you know, they had the hair working and they could be funny. John Crux certainly, but any other great experiences or memories from those guys?
Oh gosh. I mean, I remember in spring training, this was in 93, Dykstra got a new Mercedes, a 12 cylinder Mercedes sports car. And I was doing a profile on him. So he said, well, come on with me. I got to go back to the apartment. We lived in the same building, by the way. This is how long ago it was in the newspaper business. But he stuck me in this car and we were riding in it. And there's a bridge that goes from Clearwater to Sand Key, where we lived. And you had to go 5 miles an hour on this old rickety thing or you'd get a ticket. There were always people there. And if you could imagine Lenny Dykstra in a 12-cylinder Mercedes going 5 miles an hour, he was going crazy, just chomping at the bit. So I remember that. And I don't know if I told you guys the story of Lenny on The Tonight Show, which I may have. But in 93, in 94, after the Phillies had been to the World Series, they were sort of national celebrities mm-hmm. for their misfit image. And The Tonight Show invited Lenny when the first time the Phillies were out in L.A. to appear on the show. Jay Leno was the host at the time. So it was an off day, and I said, this will be an interesting story. So I wrote the Today Show PR person, and they said, yeah, sure, come on in. So I get there, and they have me sitting in the front row, like, you know, 12 feet from Jay Leno's desk. And Lenny comes out, and the previous guest had been, you remember Steve Urkel, the nerdy character from, what was that show, Family Matters or something?
Family Matters, yeah.
Yeah, and he was the first guest. And Lenny comes out and he's talking to Jay, asking him about the uniforms and this kind of stuff. And there's a break in the commercial break. And when they do that, the lights go on in the studio and in the audience. So the people on stage can see you in the audience. And Lenny looks down and sees me sitting there. And he elbows Urkel and says, hey, there's Frank. As if Steve Urkel had any idea who the hell that was. But that was a fun team to cover. And you're right, they did not like dealing with us too much. But Dykstra was an exception. If he thought you could get him a big contract, help him get a big contract, he had all the time in the world for you.
Well, Frank, you covered a lot of Penn State football along the way, too, and they turned into a book, at least one book. How was the time in Happy Valley? And how was the Joe Paterno era?
Well, you know, the year I did the book, I think the publisher's hope was that an expectation was that this was going to be Paterno's last year. He was nearing 80 and things weren't going well. And they thought, well, let's get a writer in there. We'll do a book and we'll be ahead of the game when he retires. We'll have the book out and it'll be a great bestseller. Well, that was the season, I don't know if you remember, I think it was 2003 or 2004, when Penn State went like 1-9. they had trouble scoring points. They scored like, I don't know, Zach Mills was his first year's quarterback, and they just couldn't score, and they lost consistently week after week. So the next year, I wasn't the Phillies beat writer at the time. I mean, the Penn State beat writer. I was just covering them. I took time off from the Inquirer to write this book. So when I went back to the Inquirer, they said, oh, you're familiar with Paterno and Penn State. Why don't you be the beat writer? So I'm thinking, oh, God, this is a 1-9 team or whatever it was, 2-10. Or I didn't really want to do it. And damned if Joe doesn't turn that team into an 11-1 juggernaut and they go to the Orange Bowl and beat Florida State with Mike. You know, remember they had Michael Robinson and
I was at that Orange Bowl.
Were you really? Yeah, it was a great game.
Yep.
It was overtime. What, was it overtime or? It was,
a couple overtimes.
And it lasted, I remember, well into the night.
Yep.
But, I mean, that was an indication of what kind of coach Joe was. You know, you give him a little time and give him some talent, and he could coach with the best of them. You know, it's just sad what's happened. You know, with everybody knows what's happened up there, but, and his image has suffered as a result, but the man could coach.
Hey, Frank, for whatever reason, we lost your video. We still hear you loud and clearly, but we don't see your smiling face. So
that may be a blessing.
But you're still there, so that's okay.
Okay. Well, Frank,
you go back even farther than Bill and I do in terms of, you know, covering the Philly sports scene and Philly sports memories. We know you admired some of those Penn State teams, I think. We know you loved the 85 Villanova. championship basketball team. You wrote a book about them. Any other particular favorite teams that you that stood out for you in Philly?
Oh, I love the Dick Allen Phillies. You know, those teams at 64 was still the signature year of my life, I think. I mean, I think it shaped my perspective on sports and life in general. I mean, and you know, you just realize that no matter how good things look, there's always a chance it can go bad. So I guess if I'm a pessimist, we can attribute it to that. But that those teams certainly, you know, I grew up loving. The Villanova, the Temple team that won the NIT in 1969 was a great team that I loved. I really enjoyed. I was at Temple at the time, so I may be a little biased. But, you know, so many of those Big Five teams, those St. Joe's teams with Matt Gukas and Cliff Anderson and the Villanova teams with Melchione and UB White and Johnny Jones. And you know, I have so many great memories of the Palestra. I think if there's one thing I miss in Philadelphia sports at this stage in my career, which is no longer a career, but at this stage of my life, if there's one thing I miss about Philadelphia sports, it's those Palestra doubleheaders and the excitement that the Big Five used to create. I mean, it was inevitable that it was going to fade at some point, but it's still sad that it happened and the way it happened. And, you know, you tell people about those, the way the excitement generated at those doubleheaders, and they look at you like you had two heads, but it really was a special, uniquely Philadelphia institution. And I think as I look back, that's the thing I miss the most is how that, you know, the Big Five still exists, but it's just a shadow of itself. So yeah, those are what I remember. Those are the things I kind of remember at this stage.
Yeah, Frank, it's funny that you mentioned that because I've shared this with Chet before. The Palestra was my first ever job. I was an usher at the Palestra in the you know, 72, 3, 4 years old, 74 as a high school kid. And that's where my stuff formed. And man, it's just unbelievable. Great, great memories of that.
Yeah, you just can't duplicate that. The way the noise echoes in that building and the smell of the hot dogs and the popcorn and the banners. Yeah. And the legends that were coaching at the time. And it just was a great thing that we had all to ourselves for a while.
And we even had Yo-Yo. Remember Yo-Yo?
Yeah. We could forget Yo-Yo. I'm one of the great characters of Philadelphia sports.
Well, hey, Frank, you mentioned to us before, you told us the Pudd'nhead Jones story, and we know you like, you know, you're a big Dick Allen fan, but favorite guys that you've been a fan of, maybe not covering, and favorite guys that you did cover?
Well, favorite guys not covering were Dick Allen, Bill Melchione. You remember him? He was a great guard at Villanova. I loved Ben Hawkins, the Eagles wide receiver. He used to leave his chin strap unbuttoned and just had such colorful, just flair. I really used to like him as a kid. Those early Flyer teams, I loved Andre Lacroix and the French Connection, that line. Andre Lacroix, Jean-Guy Gendron, and Simone Nollet. Yep. That was, you know, and there was a guy named Forbes Kennedy on those early teams who, his only distinction was he led the league in penalties every year, and he was great fun to watch. Mm-hmm. In terms of covering guys, I mean, you know, I think Gino Auriemma was maybe the best interview I ever got, just in terms of the content of the interview, not necessarily the level of celebrity, but he was just a tremendous, really introspective guy. I think Dale Murphy might have been the nicest athlete I ever covered. I mean, you couldn't ask for a guy that was sweeter. I mean, to everyone, not just to writers, but to his teammates and his opponents, and just a heck of a guy. You know, there were a lot of jerks along the way, and you know, I think I've already mentioned one earlier today. But
when does that book come out, Frank?
There you go. I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, Frank, you covered Olympics, you covered World Series, you covered Super Bowls. We got Olympics coming up, of course, this summer. Any special memories from the Olympics that you covered?
I can remember sitting on the floor of a Japanese restaurant with Bill Conlon. You remember Bill Conlon? He was about 300 pounds at the time. Watching him get down into that position he had to get to eat a meal in Japan. That was something I'll never forget. I remember that. But, I mean, I was there for all eight of Michael Phelps's gold medals in Beijing. You know, because they wanted to be on primetime television in the U.S., they were like 7 o'clock in the morning in Beijing. So that was kind of tough. You know, I remember I was at the Usain Bolt winning the 100 meters for the first time when he did the bow and arrow thing. That was amazing. Some of the basketball games, I remember a USA-Lithuania game that was a tremendous game. Just so many things about the Olympics. There was a water polo game. I don't remember who was playing, but I just remember at the end of it being blown away about the competitiveness and how vicious these guys were, could be to each other. It must have been a couple of former Soviet Union republics that were taking out a lot of their angers on each other in the pool. But all kinds of things like that. There was I've been so lucky to have been in so many of these things. The Olympics are a great spectacle. I think that opening ceremonies in Beijing with all the technological wonders that they employed was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. I know that's not a pat answer when you're talking about sports, but it was astounding just to sit there and look at that, and the money and the thought and the technology that went into that was just astounding. So those are just a couple of things from the Olympics. The food in Turin, in Torino, I'll never forget that. And also in Torino, if I can extend this a little more, if I was staying in a mountain village because I was supposed to cover the skiing there, and a lot of times I'd be in Torino, and I wouldn't get back into the little village. I was a mountain village called Salzedu. It was on the French border. It even had a French name, but it was in Italy. And I didn't have a key. I was living in an apartment. For some reason, I couldn't get a key. So I had to wait for somebody to walk into the apartment, and I would just follow them in. I couldn't understand what they were saying to me, but I'm sure they weren't happy. And there was this one little restaurateur in the town that would stay open for me. No matter what time I got back, I could go knock on his door, and he would open up and make me a meal. He felt sorry for me, I guess. So that's another thing I remember. A lot of my memories are things that happened away from the arena and the court and the field. Things that happened kind of in the background, maybe the locker room.
Well, hey, Frank, we have a question I want to throw up here because I think you'll enjoy it. Larry Carlin is watching us and says, always enjoyed Frank's work. Wonder who Frank's favorite Delco athlete is.
Whoa, Delco athlete? Well, I mean, I was such a basketball nut back then, and I didn't miss an O'Hara game for 4 years, I don't think, but I love Tom Inglesby, you know. Speaking of Delco, his son's more famous than he is now, a lot more famous.
This month anyway, isn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was just such a great player, just such a, you know, he wasn't showy at all. There wasn't anything flashy about Tom Inglesby, but he was just so fundamentally sound that if he took a jumper, you're pretty sure he was going to make it. So I really liked him. He was one of my favorite Delco athletes. Gosh, who else? Been so many. Remember Don Kloon played for the Giants briefly. He was a tight end at O'Hara.
You like those O'Hara guys.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, that's the only thing I can remember at this stage of my life.
I thought you were going to throw Cappy out there, but he's a Bonner guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, that's true. Cappy Reddy. Absolutely. I went to school with his brother Marty at Temple, and he was – Cappelletti made us all proud if you're from Delaware County, sure.
Well, Frank, you've watched basketball for a long time. His frequent injuries aside, Joel Embiid, where does he rank with the other great 76ers centers? You know the other couple of greats. And how far might this Sixers team go?
It's so hard to compare eras. You know, I remember I played golf with Jimmy Lynam a couple of years ago, and he was right about the time Embiid had been injured and was just starting to play. And he told me, this guy is unbelievable. He's like the greatest seven-footer I've ever seen in my life. He can do things Wilt can't do, couldn't do. And you look at him, and it's true. I mean, he can do things Will couldn't do. But it was a different game, a different era, a different style of play. You're talking about injuries. I mean, Will never sat. Will never sat out a minute of a game. He just played through it all. Now, it's a little bit of a different game, and Will had a little bit of a different body. He was a little sturdier, I think, than Embiid. But those two guys, I mean, nobody compares to Will in my mind. Since I'm 71, maybe that's, maybe that's an indication of just how old I am. But, he was just such a dominant player. I was watching his show the other night, and they were just talking about the night he had 55 rebounds. 55 rebounds. That's almost as amazing as 100 points. One year he led the league in assists. We've all heard these things about Will, but they still astound you when you actually see the statistics on paper. You just couldn't stop him. And he was stronger than anyone. He was more agile than any of his fellow centers in the league. Maybe Russell aside, but he was 4 or 5 inches bigger than Russell. So Russell had a hell of a time trying to contain him. If you look at his statistics to get the Celtics, Russell never did contain him. I mean, Russell may have helped contain everybody else, but he never did. He couldn't stop Wilt. And Russell is probably the greatest defensive player of all time. So that's a long way of saying that Wilt was great.
Hey, Frank, before we run out of time, I want to ask you, I don't know if this was actually a planned retirement or it all kind of just happened real quickly, but what's on the docket for Frank Fitzpatrick and his family here now that you've hit that retirement?
Well, I think, as I said, I hope to play a little more golf, spend more time with my grandchildren, maybe travel with my wife. But I'll still be writing from time to time. They've already asked me if I would continue to do history pieces and maybe an essay from here and there. And, even some of the editors in the other departments have asked me if I would mind writing something from time to time. Features. And I got something from the business editor just yesterday. Say, would you be interested in doing this? And I said, no, I just hired 2 days ago, for God's sake. I don't want to work yet. But you'll see my byline around, anytime you guys want to talk about what's happening in 1962 or something, I'm your guy.
We already got you booked for your end of the year special visit.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you.
All right, Frank. Well, hey, we've used up all of our time. We certainly appreciate you jumping on with us really quick. We only invited you just a couple days ago when you retired, and we're glad you took the time to do it with us.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it, you guys, and I enjoy your show. Keep it up.
All right, Frank. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, Chet. Hey, how good was that, huh?
That was awesome. Great stuff from Frank.
Oh, yeah. We could have gone on all night long. Great stuff. Hey, Chet. You sitting on your couch? Because I got a feeling your couch is getting more mileage than your car. And it's time to start saving with Allstate's pay-as-you-go auto insurance.
Yeah, you know that, Bill. Allstate's pay-as-you-go auto insurance puts you in control. You only pay for the miles you drive with the same full coverage that a traditional policy offers. Pay-per-mile insurance gives customers greater control of their insurance costs. See how much you can save with pay-per-mile car insurance by calling your local agent. In Westchester, Pennsylvania, that is Dave Lavoy. Call Dave at 610-430-0700. Again, 610-430-0700. And start to save more now that you are driving less.
Hey, everybody. It's Willie Nile here, and you're listening to Chet and Bill on Philly Press Box Radio. You lucky people.
Don't be interrupting, Willie.
You were slow on a Willie Nile switch tonight, pal.
I didn't think so. There must have been a lag down there in Florida, pal.
Must have been. Well, hey, let's talk Sixers for a minute more. They're in a tussle with the Hawks. Series of 2 games, game 5 in progress. Some dominating wins by the Sixers, and then they kind of laid an egg the other night, and Doc Rivers none too happy about it.
Well, yeah, and why should he be? I mean, they had a 17 or 18-point lead, and then blew it. No killer instinct. Tobias Harris had a great first half, then took only 5 shots in the second half. Ben Simmons, just not aggressive at all offensively, took just 1 shot the entire second half. He needed to step up and didn't. He was 1 for 5 from the foul line. That's been a continued problem all the playoffs. And, of course, Joel Embiid had a horrible night, thanks largely, I'm pretty sure, due to that torn meniscus that was causing him a lot of pain. He admitted it was really bothering him the other night. He just really struggled on offense, didn't have the lift that he needed. He was 4 for 20 from the field, 0 for 12 in the second half. The Hawks didn't do anything special to win that game. The Sixers just gave it away.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that whole injury thing a little bit later on. But I do want to throw something out. I shared this with you today, but it came out late. Most people probably didn't hear it. But I want to read this, Chet, and have your comment, because I think you have a comment on it. LeBron James, who I hate to use as the spokesman of the NBA, but he is the spokesman of the NBA, tweeted, "They all didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players, which ultimately is the product and benefit of our game. These injuries isn't just part of the game. It's the lack of pure rim rest. Rest before starting back up 8, possibly 9 All-Stars have missed playoff games, most in league history. This is the best part of the year for the league and fans, but missing a ton of your favorite players. It's insane. If there's one person that knows about the body and how it works all year round, it's me. I speak for the health of all the players, and I hate to see this many injuries this time of the year. Sorry, fans. Wish you guys were seeing all your favorite guys right now."
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know how much truth there is to that. I mean, they did have to alter the schedule, you know, last year and this year because of the coronavirus. We saw more injuries in baseball last year also in the shortened season. People, athletes get into a certain rhythm, a certain schedule, and, you know, when they're off of that, I can see that it could mess them up a bit. But on the other hand, they're supposedly in such great shape that they should be able to adapt to a slightly different schedule, slightly later start to the season. I know it was compacted, you know, from the end of last season, and I know they played a few more games in a little less time, less games overall, but, you know, more compact schedule. But you would think these guys, with the trainers that they have and the ability to have, they should be able to overcome that. So I'm kind of torn as far as what he's saying there.
Well, you know what? You're probably going to find this hard to believe, but I agree with him. Mm. I agree with him, and we've seen it in hockey. We've seen it in football. Injuries, you know, longer seasons, shorter breaks. They're in phenomenal shape, all of them. They're the greatest athletes in the world, all these pros. But the body is the body. The body can only take so much pounding. The knees only take so much pounding. I'm going to agree with LeBron that, you know, I don't know the answer. I don't know if, you know, you're not going to get shorter seasons. But to the point, and you're going to find this really hard that for me to say that I'm saying this, Jet, from the load management standpoint, like he's saying, now is the time that you need to be playing and these guys are breaking down. You're going to see more and more load management based on just this conversation from LeBron.
Yeah, and it might not be a bad thing. We saw Kawhi Leonard go down last night. So hopefully, you know, things will get back on schedule now that COVID is mostly, you know, behind us. And hopefully things will get better in the years going forward. By the way, one other thing, how about Kevin Durant last night playing the entire 48 minutes, which nobody has done in 3 years in the NBA in the playoffs, which is hard to believe in itself. And he seemed to come through it okay. 48 minutes, 49 points, a triple-double. Very impressive.
I think he probably slept well last night.
Oh, man. Quite a performance. All right.
Well, more on the Sixers as we go on. Hopefully, by the time we're together next week, we're moving on to another round. Because if not, as you mentioned earlier, there are going to be some unhappy fans in Philadelphia.
Speaking of moving on, let's talk baseball.
Let's talk baseball, Chet. We mentioned the Phils go to L.A. They lose 2 close games in a row. Zach Wheeler, Clayton Kershaw tonight at 10:10 Eastern if you're able to stay up that late. But then off to San Francisco to see Gabe Kapler in that first-place Giants bunch for 3 games. The Phillies need some wins, Chet.
Yeah, they sure do. The West Coast has often been unkind to the Phils. And, well, here we go again. 2 straight losses in L.A., just 4 runs for the Phils in the 2 games so far. a slew of runners left on base. That's been a problem. And, you know, by the way, you and I have had as many hits over the past week as Rhys Hoskins. That's not good.
Actually, what's it up to, 30?
Over 33 30? Now.
33.
Over 33.
33. Man, yeah. You know what? That's talking about not buying a hit right there. Wow.
Yikes.
Well, you know, they've gotten some good pitching the last couple nights. They just haven't been able to put it together. And, geez, you know, they're five back in the Mets. DeGrom's going tonight. Kershaw's going against us. You lose again, you're down six probably. That gap is widening quickly.
Yeah. Time to get moving.
That's right. And on a good note, some guys are swinging the bat pretty well. Gene Segura, obviously. Odubel's swinging well. Alex Baum's starting to swing the bat pretty well, too.
The bad news, Gene Segura got injured last night, Bill. I don't know if you know that, late in the game. And nothing official as yet that I've seen, but there's a very good chance from what I'm hearing that he might have to go on the injured list.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, you had a chance to visit with the voice of the Phillies, Tom McCarthy, T-Mac, just this afternoon. So what's T-Mac's take on what's going on and where this team's going? I guess he doesn't travel, right? So he's still around.
Correct. He's still in Jersey, you know, and then in Philly for the games. Well, you're going to hear that. But before I play the interview with T-Mac, I wanted to relive what happened 1 week ago tonight, Bill, when in the bottom of the ninth and the Phillies down 1-0 against the visiting Braves, rookie Luke Williams, in his first major league start, gave fans quite a thrill, and it was T-Mac with the call.
Fly ball, left field. Heredia is going back toward the wall. It did creep into everybody's mind. It's a two-run walk-off home run. Luke Williams. Yes, sir. How about this welcome to Philadelphia?
Hey, Tom, great to talk with you again. And just before our interview, I'm going to have started something, a positive note for you. I will have played your call from a week ago tonight. Luke Williams' walk-off home run to beat the Braves. That was certainly one of those moments that, you know, a lot of people, including you, I'm sure, will never forget.
Yeah, I think it was one of those that you don't expect, Chet, honestly. It was pretty cool. But then again, that's what walk-offs are about. I mean, so many people try to do them, and a lot of times it just doesn't come to fruition. That one was pretty special, though, and partly because his family was there. The moment of the game, Eflin had pitched so well for six innings, and the Phillies got him no runs. But to do it like that, you know, I'll be honest with you, off the bat, I thought, yeah, this is going to be an extra base hit, but I didn't think it was going to carry out of the ballpark the way it did. And, you know, Joe said the same thing from the dugout. It is pretty sweet, though. I mean, that kind of stuff is pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool indeed. So three straight walk-off wins last week, and then a Sunday shutout of the Yankees. I was there for that. What a great atmosphere. But then a trip out to the West Coast that has started with two losses to the Dodgers. I mean, I know they're a great team, but why have the Phillies struggled so much on the road the last few years?
You know, it's a great question. I felt it was more because of pitching than anything else, but that obviously hasn't been the case even on these two games. Because pitching – to me, I mean, if you don't have a steady stream of starting pitching or the bullpen, you're in trouble. I mean, particularly against teams like the Dodgers. You know, obviously, it's a mixture of things. I mean, against the Dodgers, these are two winnable games. They're 2-for-20 with runners in scoring positions. So that, to me, is the biggest fault in this particular series. But I think you can go back to the road woes the Phillies have had recent years. And every single trip seems to have a different personality as far as their, you know, what the games that they lose. And I can't put my finger on it. I really can't. You know, the hope is that as this season continues on, that they figure it out, because, you know, they're five out right now with the Mets playing as well as they are, as crazy as that is with all their injuries. But I can't put my finger on the road woes. I really can't.
Well, one thing that's not helping certainly is injuries. Bryce Harper left last night's game with back tightness. He's not having a great year physically. He's just 28 years old. Seems like one thing after another. How big a concern is Bryce Harper's health?
I think the nagging stuff is probably a concern. And I think it's a concern for him, too, because he put so much effort this offseason into making sure his back was solid. So I think that's concerning for him. He plays the game from a physical standpoint pretty hard. I know that, you know, when we watch him play in the outfield, he's moving all the time. I think his swing is extremely strong and violent. I don't know. I mean, it's the same he's always played. You know, somebody asked me today, does he need to back off a little bit? I don't know how you back off. I really don't. You know, I have a son who plays minor league baseball who dove into the stands to catch a ball during preseason this past year, this past preseason, hurt his foot pretty bad. And somebody said, well, he's got to back off a little bit. I said, I don't know how you tell him how to back off. That's my thing, Chad. I don't know how you tell somebody that plays that way, you know, that they have to back off the way, you know, I guess people would like him to a certain extent. You know, I think it's always concerning when you have nagging injuries like this. Chase Utley had them too. But again, it's the way the person plays.
And now we'll see what happens with Gene Segura, who may have to go on the injured list. We don't know as yet. Speaking of concerns, though, Rhys Hoskins, who was so terrific in May, is just really scuffling here in June. I think he's 0 for his last 33. Is it just bad luck, or is he doing something different, or what?
Well, I think it's mechanical in a lot of ways. I mean, and I say that only because of listening to Joe, listening to Ben Davis, listening to Ruben Amaro talk about it, Kevin Franzen. It's very upper body, which means he's, you know, he's kind of floating a little bit. I'm not a swing doctor to be able to tell you what's wrong and what he needs to fix. I will tell you this, that, you know, 0 for 33 is a long streak. And you know, Ryan Howard was 0 for 35 at one point. Now, he was at the end of his career, but he was 0 for 35. But the last few games of that season, he turned it around. The same can be said for all the others that went through these kind of funks. Joe Morgan, for instance, in 83, went through a terrible funk with the Phillies. He was, you know, 0 for 35, I think it was, and or 0 for 36. And then he had that September to remember. So it will turn around. This is not anything that's physical injury-wise. I just think he's in a really bad rut right now. We've seen him in these kind of streaks. Not this bad, but we've seen him in these kind of streaks before.
Yeah. Well, you and
he's
Ruben.
Starting, though. I mean, I know he's frustrated. I will say this. What I thought was actually pretty good, and he is this way. I mean, you know, I love him as a person. He's a great kid. Yeah, he sat up and talked yesterday after the game about it. I mean, he was, you know, he doesn't back off from it.
Yeah. Well, you and Ruben talked about this on the broadcast Tuesday night. The Phillies have a pretty solid 1-2-3 pitching rotation right now with Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, and Zach Eflin as well. They're 5 games out, I know, but will those guys, do you think, at least keep them in the NL East race?
You know, I was thinking about this last night driving home. It was obviously, you know, pretty late last night as I was driving home. They're in a danger zone right now. 5 out with no thought of a wild card because of the way the East is. To me, they're in a little bit of a danger zone. Yes, I do think they'd keep him in it. I do think that they have to find ways to win these games. You know, they're just not winning all of them when these three are on the hill. And I think that's the part that is probably a little concerning, Chet, that they have to kind of rectify. But yeah, I think they'll keep them in still to play. And we're getting to a danger. I thought beginning with this national series that, you know, that last homestand, that this was the best, biggest stretch, most important stretch for the Phillies. And I still believe that. I know they're 6-4 during the stretch. It's the last 10, but they got to figure this out. If they can get a win tonight against the Dodgers and then win the series against the Giants, then I feel a little bit better.
Well, the bullpen, though not as bad as last year, is still often shaky, including closer Hector Neris. Is he still the best option, you think, to close games?
I think he is. And I know people probably, you know, look at that and say you're crazy. But I, Chad, I still think he is. And I have a few thoughts on it. I just don't think Jose Alvarado throws enough strikes. That's my biggest concern. I don't think Connor Brogdon has enough experience. And I think Sam Coonrod, as good as he's been, it's been a good acquisition. I still don't know if he can get in there and close on an everyday basis. Unless there's somebody else you can present to me to be in that spot, I just think Hector is, because of his seasoning more than anything else, is the most experienced guy that we have out there. But I will acknowledge that he's got to be more aggressive in the strike zone with some of these innings, particularly with a 3-run lead.
Tom, you mentioned tonight's pitching matchup. Zach Wheeler for the Phils, Clayton Kershaw for the Dodgers. That's a pretty good matchup. Wheeler's been terrific. You looking forward to this one?
I am. It's not the same that I used to feel when Roy Halladay or Cliff Lee pitched because the team was in first place all the time at that point. But it's close to that. You know, you kind of look at it and say, man, I can't wait to see what he's going to do tonight. And the fact that Kershaw's pitching too. Now, he's had a little bit of a renaissance, although I'm interested to see how he responds. His last outing, after all this little talk comes out about the tackiness on the fingers and things like that, his numbers were down a little bit. But I think this is a cool matchup. I think the pitching's actually been, I mean, the Dodgers starter in game one wasn't great. Spencer Howard was okay. I thought Eflin was good last night. I thought Urias was good last night. So I look forward to these kind of pitching matchups.
Well, speaking of sticky fingers, Tom, batting averages are way down this year, more strikeouts than ever. Part of that apparently because pitchers are cheating. MLB now will apparently be cracking down on that, 10-game suspensions for violators. Will this threat of disciplinary action change things, do you think?
Well, I think it already has, only because of the chirping that's going on for the pitchers. You know, Steven Souza, who has just been added to the Dodgers roster, sent something out on social media about the pitchers and the quote-unquote cheating that they're doing.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when more hitters become vocal about it. Tyler Glasnow from the Rays obviously is attributing his injury to the fact that he can't use any of the substances that he was previously allowed to use. Trevor Bauer talked last night. And I didn't read his social media post until after we talked about it. So then I went back last night when I got home. It was like 3 a.m. and I was reading all of his social media posts saying that he, you know, was doing everything with rosin and sweat. I do think we're going to see a change. I mean, it's been a very subtle change, Chet, since the verbiage came out originally when people started talking about it. 236 to 247, you know, team batting average is up since that time. I don't know how drastic a change it's going to be, but the fact that pitchers are talking the way they're talking leads you to believe that something's that there is some truth to what's going on.
We'll certainly keep an eye on that. Hey, next stop for the Phils, Tom, out in San Francisco against Gabe Kapler's Giants. Is it possible Gabe is a better manager than Phillies fans might believe?
I think he's getting better as a manager. I still think that his quirkiness as a skipper and some of the moves that he made, you know, and some of the changes he made to personnel and what he wanted them to do, I still think that it was the right move to move on from him. You know, he's a good guy. I mean, I always love talking to him. He's a good friend. So I'm happy that he's getting an opportunity. I think he's a better manager now with more experience. And I will say this, Chet, I mean, this is a no knock to anybody, you know, with the Phillies pitching staff. He's got better pitchers than he had with the Phillies. I mean, they're not better than Aaron Nola, although Gausman is having better numbers than Aaron Nola, but he's got better pitchers.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of it. Plus his offense. I mean, they were down 7-0 yesterday and they wound up winning again. Yeah. Again, it was against the Diamondbacks. But he's got better personnel than he had with the Phillies, I think, full bore across the board. And I think he's just more experienced than he was.
Final thing, Tom, I know some of the beat reporters are now back on the road covering the team.
Awesome.
Any word yet on how soon you and your guys might be in visiting ballparks again?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be this year for us, but I do think radio is going to start traveling after the All-Star break consistently. I think that you're going to see Scott and Kevin Franzen go to events that are on the East Coast that they can travel to through car, maybe train to. But I do think that after the All-Star break, you might see them travel a little more consistently. I don't know that for sure, but that's the feeling I'm getting around baseball. Radio obviously travels less than TV does because we have a small army that is part of our crew. But I think that, you know, for us, I'm just being realistic, Chet. I mean, nobody's really told us anything. I would assume that we're going to be in studio on the road while the team's on the road for the rest of the year. And then, you know, hopefully in 2022, there's no looking back as far as that goes. And, you know, I appreciate everybody's patience with it. You know, my bosses have been very lucid and transparent with what they've told us. And I've appreciated that. I appreciate the technology where we've kind of learned to do things. I also appreciate my crew more than I've ever appreciated my crew. And I know that there's probably no objectivity to this, but man, our camera operators in Philadelphia are unbelievable. And I think we've noticed that from the games that we've done where we're in the studio watching somebody else's feed. It just really makes me appreciate their talents. And I'm excited about that because I've always had a high regard for them anyway. But I appreciate them a little bit more. I appreciate, you know, our producer, Jeff Halleckman, and our director, Nick Marchetta, even more too. For what they're able to accomplish, because they're in a studio about 20 feet from us, trying to patch all this together in a myriad of seconds. Like last night, you know, nobody saw Dodgers, Phillies, scoreboard operator, computer operator. Nobody saw that JT Realmuto had a check swing on that pitch in the ninth inning, and the umpire had changed it. And if we were on the road, we would have seen it.
All right. Amen. Let's hope the Phils can get back on the winning track. T-Mac, great to talk with you once again.
All right, Chet. Thank you, buddy.
Well, that's some good stuff right there, Chet.
Yeah, T-Mac's awesome. You know, I had trouble getting this organized because he is such a busy guy. He had, I think, 6 interviews today with, you know, various people around the country to talk about just baseball in general and the Phillies. So I'm glad he was able to squeeze me in.
Absolutely. We appreciate that. One other Phillies note I'm going to make, Chet, and then we got to move on, is if Joe Girardi takes another pitcher out like Wheeler and Nola at 105 pitches with a shutout the other night in the 8th inning with 12 strikeouts and no walks, something might go through the big screen. It's just not it's idiotic. That's the only word I can come up with.
I know you love that 100 pitch.
Idiotic. All right. I'm going to let that go because that's a whole story for another day.
Move along.
All right, Chet. Let's see. Let's give a shout out to all the shows over at the Edge of Philly Sports Network, which you and I are part of. Bird's Eye Q every Monday, 7 p.m. Live with Kyle and Eric Quinn talking Eagles football. Edge of Philly Sports Live with Joe, Freddie, and Big Al. They cover 4 for 4 and so much more. Watch live Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern Time. And join Tom Kelly and the gang at the Patterson Avenue Fanatics Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. talking all things Philly sports. You can check out all the shows at www.eopsports.com. Help us out by hitting those subscribe, follow, and like buttons. And as always, share with your friends and family. Don't forget to sign up for the weekly EOP newsletter that arrives each Friday via email.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Chet, are we ringing the bell tonight?
Hey, why not, Bill? Why not? Let's do it. We got something special because there's a semi-holiday coming up this weekend, so let's do it.
Bill, ahead of Mother's Day last month, I gave you a bunch of my favorite mom or mother or mama songs, and it's only fair that with Sunday being Father's Day that I do the same for, you know, my favorite dad, father, papa songs, that kind of thing, right? There are some great songs about fathers that I didn't include in this list, though, because they don't have any of those key words in the title. Things like Harry Chapin's Cats in the Cradle, Mike and the Mechanics' The Living Years, or Dan Fogelberg's Leader of the Band. All great songs, but I'm excluding them. I'm also going to leave out Father Christmas by the Kinks, and I Believe in Father Christmas by Greg Lake, because, well, they're holiday songs and not really about dads. So before I give you my actual top 10, here's a look at some that I considered, but that will have to settle for honorable mention. Some great ones by artists including James Brown, Johnny Cash, George Michael, Madonna, Nilsson, Bob Seger, Paul Simon, and The Who, among others. Yep, lots of great ones, but for me, not quite top 10 material. Now, the ones that I will mention next are, so here we go, my top 10 in reverse order, of course. Number 10 is a fun country song. It's called Daddy's Money by Ricochet. 9th is Fleetwood Mac's Oh Daddy, Christine McVie on lead vocals on that one. At number 8 is a fun pop tune from 1989, also called Oh Daddy. Completely different song, though. That one is by Adrian Belew with help from his then 11-year-old daughter. Yeah. Oh, Daddy, when you're gonna be a big star? I got a suit and a pink guitar. Oh, Daddy, when you're gonna break it wide open? I don't know, but I still keep hoping. Coming in at number 7, the great Eric Clapton and My Father's Eyes. 6th is a terrific tune from 2007 called Father and Friend by Elaine Clark with some help from his real-life dad, Dane Clark. As for the top 5, well, The Temptations masterpiece Papa Was a Rolling Stone. That had to be on the list, right? An early 70s classic for sure. Number 4, a wonderful song written and sung by Peter Gabriel about his dad and him called, fittingly, Father, Son.
Father, Son, locked in swan, in this empty room.
3rd is a great song about a not-so-great dad. It's Everclear's Father of Mine. At number 2, then, a beautiful tune by the late, great Luther Vandross, Dance with My Father. And for me, the very best dad or father song, one that was originally released as a B-side to the Cat Stevens hit Moonshadow, and it was also then on the great 1970 album Tea for the Tillerman. It's called Father and Son.
The
Take your time, think a lot. Why think of everything you've got? For you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not.
Yusuf, Cat Stevens, Father and Son. I love that one, and that is my number one. That is my list. Happy Father's Day this weekend to all the great dads out there.
And that's my number one also. That and Cats in the Cradle that you eliminated. Yeah. Those would be my two top ones.
Yeah, if I didn't go with that restriction, Cats in the Cradle would absolutely be in the top three. That's a terrific song.
I'm with you. Good stuff. Good stuff. And happy Father's Day to you, too, as we come up on the weekend. Sixers 11, Hawks 7 at the moment. 9:15 in the first. Korkmaz in the starting lineup's got 5 points.
Go Sixers.
All right. Hey, Chet, great guest tonight, Frank Fitzpatrick and Tom McCarthy. Who's coming to Philly Press Box Radio next week? You got a tall order to fill.
Well, next week, we're not sure where we're going to be in terms of the Sixers postseason. Hopefully, it will still be going on. I'm pretty sure that it will. But we will talk Sixers with Inquirer 76ers beat writer Keith Pompey. This guy right here. There he is. Keith Pompey joining us for the first time since December. Will there be a second guest? I don't know. That is yet to be determined.
Well, do we have to talk Giants?
Only if you bring it up. I'm not going to. He's a Giants fan.
Jeez, we will do without that. All right, parting shot for you, or did you cover it?
I did not cover it. I'll take a drink of my medicine here. All right. Yeah, Bill, I would love to tell you that Ray Dittinger's book, Finished Business, is fantastic and a must read. But, well, the truth is, I've only read the introduction and the first chapter so far, so I can't really give it a full grade just yet. But I'm pretty sure that I will be able to tell you how terrific it is in a couple of weeks. I'm a slow reader. Sorry about that. Ray is an amazing writer, and this is, you know, a book of his reflections on 50 years of covering Philly sports, including, of course, time covering the Phillies and Flyers back in the day, the Broad Street Bully era, his time at NFL Films, and, of course, lots of stuff about the Eagles, highlighted by that Super Bowl 52 title, him, you know, meeting up with his son and hugging and that special moment. So there's that in the book as well. Even without having read the book yet, I am absolutely positive that I can recommend Finished Business, and it does, of course, make a great Father's Day gift for any Philadelphia sports fans. By the way, Ray has a couple of more book signings coming up. He has one tomorrow, which is Thursday the 17th, if you're watching it live. That's at the Barnes & Noble in Broomall. Then another one on Saturday at a Barnes & Noble in Wilmington, Delaware. That's at, I believe, 2 o'clock on Saturday. So, again, Finished Business by Ray Dittinger. He had an amazing line for that when I was there a week and a half ago down in Morristown, and it's not surprising. Everybody loves Ray Diddy. So, again, get the book, and, Bill, happy Father's Day to you and to all the fathers out there.
Absolutely. I was going to say the same thing. Happy Father's Day. Happy kind of family Father's Day, too. It's a chance to bring the families together, and hopefully everybody gets to do that. I'm kind of looking forward to it myself. Anything else before we wrap it?
One other thing, Bill. I have that National Day calendar. Tomorrow, Thursday, is Eat Your Vegetables Day. I'm not a great vegetables eater. They recommend the healthy ones like spinach, broccoli, kale, cauliflower. I don't like any of them. Carrots, I'm okay with. And, you know, the basic stuff like corn and green beans and peas, they're okay too. But tomorrow is also National Apple Strudel Day. And that one, I'm all on board with.
I'm on board with that as well.
That's all I got. Go Sixers. Sure. Wrap it up, Bill.
All right, let's wrap it up. Let's thank tonight's special guests, Frank Fitzpatrick and Tom McCarthy, our sponsors, the Irish Rover Station House, Bob Sullivan's LikeYourAge.com, PPCC 118 Raz Room, and Dave LaVoy of Allstate's Insurance in Westchester, PA. For Jim Chet Jesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. You can listen live on Facebook, through our website, PhillyPressBoxRadio.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, all the podcast places, Google, Apple, iHeartRadio, everywhere. We're everywhere, Chet. Check us out. With that, high hopes, Philadelphia sports fans, and let's go Sixers.
Yeah, let's go Sixers. Come on, play the song.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.